Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Irish Assassins, Conspiracy, Revenge, and the Phoenix Park Murders That Stunned Victorian England, by Julie Cavanaugh, narrated by Roger Clark. A Brief History. Every listener of this book will know about the age-old hostility between the Irish and the English. But not everyone will know how, when, and where it started. It was in 1170, to be precise, that Anglo-Normans first invaded Ireland, going on to grab the best land and introduce their own feudal system, a hierarchy of master and serf, landlord and tenant, that was still in place more than 700 years later. Since then, the theme of violence between the two places, erupting, receding, erupting again, has never entirely disappeared. The muralled peace walls, separating Catholic and Protestant neighbourhoods in northern Irish cities like Belfast and Derry, had been prefigured in the 14th century by the thorny hedges and 10-foot ditches bounding the Pale, an area covering Dublin and its surroundings, under protection of the Crown and governed by its rules. It was considered to be a pocket of safety and civilization in marked contrast to the barbarous conditions of Irish life outside, and is the origin of the expression beyond the pale. This us-and-them divide, their religion or our religion, intensified during the Reformation, when Protestantism replaced Roman Catholicism as the national church in England and Ireland, and Irish Catholics were seen as dangerous worshippers of the anti-faith. Henry VIII had broken ties with Rome when the Pope refused to annul his first marriage and made himself supreme head of the English Church. He was also named King of Ireland, but his daughter, Queen Elizabeth, took much firmer control of their neighbouring island. Fearing that her enemy, the Spanish Catholic King Philip, would use Ireland as a foothold to launch an attack on England, she decided to populate the country with loyal subjects. This involved confiscating vast quantities of land from powerful Gaelic families in the province of Munster and planting Irish estates with English and Scottish settlers. One of the first arrivals was the great Elizabethan poet Edmund Spenser. Appointed a colonial official, he was a party to what was literally a war of extermination by the English. The 1580 suppression of a rebellion against the Queen in Munster. More than 600 Spanish and Irish soldiers were massacred. Ordinary people systematically butchered. Catholic priests, hanged until half-dead, were then decapitated, their heads fixed on poles in public places to instill fear in the native inhabitants. So the name of an Englishman was made more terrible now to them than the sight of an 100th was before, remarked Sir Humphrey Gilbert, the Queen's ruthless military governor. The appalling famine that resulted from the merciless destruction of crops and cattle by Elizabeth's troops left an estimated 30,000 inhabitants dying of starvation. Anatomies of death, who crawled along the ground because their legs were too weak to support them, and feasted on carrion and carcasses they had dug out of graves. Spenser was one of the Queen's most ardent devotees, and his masterpiece, the allegorical epic The Fairy Queen, an extravagant homage to her sovereignty. And yet, his horror of what he saw in Munster is embedded in his writing, the hollow-eyed character of despair, wearing rags held together with thorns. His raw bone cheeks, shrunk into his jaws, is the very image of the Irish famine victim. It was as if the English felt themselves absolved from all ethical restraints when dealing with the Irish. The divine right of kings legitimized the use of force in maintaining the dominion of the sovereign, and as the insurrections of the Irish amounted to treason, Englishmen had God's sanction to keep the rebellious natives in their thrall. Right of Conquest had also validated England's confiscation of Irish land. Ultimately, in 1641, the long-suppressed Irish retaliated with a wave of horrific attacks. Queen Elizabeth's successor, James I, had followed her policy of planting Irish estates with English and Scottish settlers and was concentrating on Ulster, the centre of residual Gaelic resistance. Native resentment erupted. A County Armagh widow was captured by insurgents, who drowned 5 of her 6 children in Portadown. 100 English Protestants were herded from the sanctuary of a church, marched to a bridge over the River Bann, and forced into the wintry waters, where they died of exposure, drowned, or were shot by musket fire. As always, though, Britain, with its far superior military resources, had the upper hand. Retaliation for the 1641 uprising and the reconquest of Ireland, which, following the English civil wars, had become the monarchy's last chance of retaining the throne, resulted in one of the most shocking war crimes ever recorded. In August 1649, 6 months after the execution of King Charles I, the parliamentarian General Oliver Cromwell decided to crush any remaining royalist loyalty among Irish Catholics by conducting a massive campaign of ethnic cleansing. During his 9-month rampage, 600,000 perished, including 1,500 deliberately targeted civilians. Landowners, given the choice of going to hell or to Connacht, were forcibly driven west to the bleakest and poorest of the provinces, where they were allowed 10% of their original acreage. And yet, the vast majority of Cromwell's contemporaries applauded this ruthless mission. To Irish Protestants, he was a brave deliverer who put down popery and set them free, while the celebrated English poet and parliamentarian Andrew Marvell endorsed Cromwell's view of himself as a divine agent, regarding him as an elemental firebrand who could not have been held back. "'Tis madness to resist or blame the force of angry heaven's flame," he wrote, in An Oration Ode Upon Cromwell's Return from Ireland. No other figure in 9 centuries of Anglo-Irish history has so starkly embodied the divide between the two nations. Ireland's view of Cromwell as a monstrous tyrant is countered by England's admiration of the soldier and statesman, today considered one of the 10 greatest Britons of all time, who steered his country toward a constitutional government. A 1946 spy film, I See a Dark Stranger, gently satirizes this polarity, pairing the naively romantic Irish heroine, a dewy Deborah Kerr, with a British Army type, Trevor Howard. He is writing a thesis in his spare time on Cromwell, explaining that the underrated general is a highly neglected character. "Huh, not in Ireland," snorts Kerr's Bridie Quilty. "Do you know what he did to us?" Her private war against Britain has been provoked by hearing Guinness-fueled tales of Cromwell's terrible deeds, and although she ends up marrying the Englishman, she still retains her fierce nationalist principles. On the first night of their honeymoon, she storms off with her suitcase after spotting the inn sign beneath their window, the Cromwell Arms. 50 years later, in much the same spirit, Irish Prime Minister Bertie Ahern is said to have marched out of the British Foreign Secretary's office, refusing to return until a painting of that murdering bastard had been removed. It was a political gaffe, likened to hanging a portrait of Eichmann before the visit of the Israeli Prime Minister. Accounts of appalling suffering have been handed down from generation to generation, mythologized in folklore, poems, and patriotic songs. It was this historical grievance against the English, the taunting Long memory, backdated, we shall not forget, not letting bygones be bygones, that Tony Blair decided to address when he was elected Prime Minister in 1997.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?